We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Fred Gillick. Fred is a graphic designer and artist. He began his career in 1995 designing album covers, posters, and t-shirts for Milwaukee musicians. Fred's love of music inspired him to create the Too Much Metal brand in 2000. Too Much Metal features unique works of art and design to elevate your anticipated and real pleasures. Over the years, Too Much Metal has become a rebel voice of communication, an independent source of rad design for smart people, businesses, and organizations seeking smart t-shirts and branding solutions. Fred states, "I create. I attempt to authentically express myself and create value. I do not discover, calculate, or deduce as a scientist or philosopher does. I invent my goal and then realize my path toward that goal." Fred, welcome to the show.
Hola, how are you?
Good, and how are you?
Dude, I'm having a great, great summer.
Awesome.
That's it's been the most fun summer I've had doing this stuff since I started doing street festivals and all kinds of music festivals like 10, 15 years ago. So it takes a little while. It takes 15 years to have fun in this racket.
Well, I hope you're having fun along the way, though, still.
Now, but I guess the difference is I get to enjoy it now.
Well,
I know how to enjoy it. You know, because all those like little tweaks along the way, like you got to monitor this, you know, how's the crew doing? How are sales doing? What's the environment like? What's the audience participation like? What is the show any good? Is the music festival any good? Is the street festival any good? Is there anything good to eat? And where's the bathroom? Are very important things, but after you do them, you for a while you get an idea of how the thing goes, I guess.
Yeah,
it's kind of like I set it up the same way a band would set it up going on the road. It's kind of the same vibe.
Interesting.
So the business model for like the t-shirts is, imagine like a band producing songs for a record, and so I'll produce t-shirts the same way. So I'll have an idea, then I'll thread on that idea, and then do, you know, like 6 to 8, sometimes 12 at a time. Nice. And now it's just the hits, because like no one cares about the deep cuts anymore, man. Everyone's like, I want a hit, I want it on iTunes, man. Yeah. Or I want a free one. Nothing is for free.
That's a good analogy to line it up with the bands there.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of what I knew, and that's how I started. And it seemed to mirror itself pretty evenly, I thought. Like, it just it was the same setup, you know? So, I mean, it's just a different way of doing retail. And, you know, the old idea of doing retail stuff, like brick-and-mortar stores, are cool. But it's because of Amazon and things like this. You don't really need to go to a shop to get anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm finding that more people have become lazy consumers and shoppers.
Yes.
And the weird thing about that is they kind of expect the same sort of level of service as like an Amazon would provide. And I'm going, well, you know, if you bankrolled me in the billions, I would, you know, tuck you in and, you know, totally read you a bedtime story and, you know, give you some cookie and milk and stuff. But it's just when you got to float everything yourself, like the standards change.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like educating a lot of people that most people who shop local get that, you know, because they understand like the dynamic is not the big box and it's not like the conglomerate telling you how to, you know, digest stuff you probably don't need. Because in my world, you don't need any of this stuff. You just want it because it's, you know, it says something about you, or it's you figured out that you're trying to say something, and whatever I've done is kind of a pretty good representation of that. And so you feel like, you know, a personal connection to it. And that to me is always the goal. It's like a communication thing. You know, it's like making a friend, you know, and that's kind of how I feel this whole thing works.
Well, this is a good little transition then as far as making new friends. So no different than that rock star that's traveling and meeting a ton of different people, I'm sure, since you've started your brand Too Much Metal. And even before then, you've probably met a million fantastic people.
Tons, absolutely. You're right, I have.
Can you share with me your most successful or favorite networking story or experience that you've had?
Well, that's a good question. I think it was, I did Riot Fest in Chicago in 2006. And I'd been doing like Summerfest before then and a bunch of street festivals. And that one wasn't going too well for whatever reason. Like the setup was dumb. They put all those vendors in like a basketball court and we just looked silly. Looked dumb.
Yeah.
There's like a tent on a basketball court and a bunch of tents inside of it. So it was kind of like those little Russian nesting doll type things.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden some shoppers came in and they're like, hey, we run Lollapalooza. Would you be interested in doing it? And that was like maybe 2 months or a month after their event. I said, absolutely, I'd love to do it. And so I had done Coachella earlier in the year. This is like 11 years ago. And the cool thing about that was just by them noticing the setup and all the cool stuff, they're like, hey, we think you'd be a good fit. And so I had done that and realized for the first time that people actually outside of the city dug, like appreciated it. So that was, although Coachella was on the West Coast, it was kind of like, it didn't matter what people on the West Coast thought because this is a Milwaukee Midwest thing. And so when the Midwesterners picked up on it, I was like, oh, this is cool.
Uh-huh.
And so that, you know, just by showing up, literally, somebody said, hey, you're pretty cool. And so that, you know, turned into this kind of like cementing of, you know, oh, yeah, you kind of do cool stuff. We like you. You're in like the cool kid club or whatever.
And I love that story. One, because you said showing up. And I think that just seems to be a theme that resonates with every guest that I have is you just got to be present and show up. Right?
Yeah, but you got to do it right, though, because a lot of people did show up.
Yeah.
And they weren't asked to participate. And
yeah.
So if you show up, you got to still do it right.
Yes.
You know, so like if your standards and your practices are like the best,
yep.
You know, at what you do, you get the best materials, you get the best design, you get the best ideas.
Yep.
And best is, you know, I mean, who are we kidding? All this stuff is subjective, right?
Yep, absolutely.
But if it, you know, if you listen and you pay attention, you know, to what's going on, as like anybody who creates for a living should do. I mean, the whole job of like creating is basically, you know, recording and then editing. And then you put the magic together and it forms, you know, comes out in a t-shirt or something like that, or a poster or a design logo or something. But, you know, so if you do all that stuff, right, because that's like what you're supposed to do, uh-huh. And then you just show up,
yep.
Then it works.
Yeah.
You know, because like if you're half ass and stuff and, you know, you just kind of like weak designs, like they're silhouettes of almost everything. And, you know, it's just like stuff that looks like clip art. And then you put some layer of distress on there, that's not cool. And so it generally gets overlooked.
Sure.
You know, I mean, there's all kinds of tricks in this stuff, but you just got to kind of, it's got to mean something in my world anyway.
Well, I love that you ended up attending an event that you felt was not a success. You were just like, what am I doing here? This is terrible. But it really turned into an amazing event.
It did. A month later. And
happened.
The Lollapalooza experience was actually really, really cool. And it's a great, and I can remember when that thing first came out and the poster that they did for it was this weird big fractal kind of design. And underneath it, it said, they made a point of saying this poster was designed on a Mac. So this was like 1992 or 1991, I think. And I was like, wow, man, you can really, because I've always been a Mac dude.
Sure, me too.
And
lady.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's just like the thing about Apple, the Macintosh is there's just something about it. Like you just gravitate towards it. Like your sensibilities just, it's easier. You just think that way. I don't know. It's kind of like, you know, it's just in you.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they did a good job of recognizing that in other people. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I thought, wow, man, you can do a bunch of stuff on computers. Because up until then, you know, going to school, you know, you would do everything by hand. Like, you know, mm-hmm. you would use like, you know, the old square, you know, the
triangles.
The triangles. And then, and then you'd use like, you know, Ruby Lith and all this sort of stuff and masking solutions. And then you would cut things out and you'd paste them and then you'd have to burn it. It was just like, man, that it's eventually going to have to get digital anyway.
Yep.
And now the irony of it is like there's this fetish hobby of people collecting old school things.
Hmm.
you know, like old typefaces and stuff like that, which is also very cool. There's nothing wrong with that. And it has its purpose. And I can remember even using those materials for some of the work that we did for this band, Citizen King, where they wanted everything old school. Mm-hmm. You know, we had to use, you know, I had to go to this place in Chicago called Fireproof Press and, you know, look through their archives of fonts to get the right one, you know, and then put it all together. And I was like, wow, man, it just didn't feel like the future in the 90s, you know, because the future was coming. And now everyone's like going to the past because it's too much. Like technology in their world.
Sure.
You know, and then one day all of a sudden you're going to be like, you know, having a quadrobyte or whatever in your head. And everyone will think that's normal.
Now you're getting really deep and philosophical.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know about that, but you can kind of see it happening.
Sure. Where the evolution.
The evolution of this stuff, right? So it kind of gets scary, right? Mm-hmm. It turns into AI and Skynet and all that.
So you've obviously connected with people all over. I mean, you're even just. I'm sure you expand beyond the borders of the country here. What do you do to stay in front of and best nurture your network?
That's a good question. It's more or less listening and putting yourself into a place where you in a space where you can listen. Because when you know, and when it's like sales time or when it's work time, you got to do that, right? But then if you don't like chill out or you know, step back a little bit, then you don't have that time to create stuff. So for me, it's like, I'll just record, I'll listen and get in front of as many people that are doing cool stuff. It's, you know, because culture is tough, you know, because you're always trying, at least I'm always looking for that audience that wants to listen. And so if I go to like, you know, the VFW post, I can listen, but I'm not going to get a lot of great ideas there. But there's great people there, but if I go to a music festival and I want to hear what those people are saying, mostly because, you know, that matters to them, then I riff really well with people who also make stuff for a living, you know, and if it's a different discipline, that's even better. Like musicians are great resources. Mm-hmm. Artists are great resources. Painters are really good, you know, sculptors. I mean, all the people who kind of do what I do, but don't do what I do are always good to riff with.
Okay.
You know, so it's, but it's like, and then listening to what they say and how they do stuff. And then if you're lucky, man, you could steal a couple of tricks and reinvent them yourselves. But I think that goes the same with everybody who does this sort of stuff. They all kind of, you know, from a distance, like what someone does and allow themselves a chance to get in, make friends, and then see, you know, there's something there.
So when you're listening and then you end up creating and you're pushing new ideas out there, do you feel that's a way of nurturing because someone sees that you've actually listened? Yeah, and
it
now
does, right, because it's like I'm engaged. It's like, oh, he's not just some dude waiting for someone else to create something so we can copy it. This is the dude that's on the front line doing it.
Okay.
And, you know, sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't work.
Sure.
You know? I mean, I don't know what people always want. I'm always, you know, sometimes you think you do, mm-hmm. you know, and then it takes them like 3 years to get it.
Sure.
And then you're like, it took you this long, huh? And I mean, Milwaukee is just kind of one of those places where, you know, we like things in boxes here so we can understand them and label them. And we kind of don't let go of what we understand them as.
Correct.
You know, so what I've learned over the years is to dose it like slowly and then let people figure it out for themselves.
Yeah. Plant the seed.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's kind of what it's like. Yeah. Right. And then, you know, then you give it up and then you hope it grows. You know, I mean, you got to still nurture it and do stuff like that. But, and that's like by reinforcement, by going to these street festivals and doing all this stuff. Cause it's like, if you want the best audience feedback ever, go to a street festival, man. You'll hear, man, you suck or that's dumb or whatever. And that's the coolest thing ever. For the most part, it hasn't been that bad ever. You know, I mean, there's like drunks at like Summerfest
that will,
you know, when they're all hammered, not think straight and like just spew nonsense.
Oh, I'm sure.
But for the most part, you know, it's Milwaukeeans right now because we used to be a great, you know, world city. And that was over 100 years ago, mostly because of industry and stuff like that. But, you know, a lot of the old school brands back then put this place on the map. And I feel like there's been like two generations that haven't done anything with it. And I feel like right now, you know, all those cats who paid attention, took their history lessons and applied stuff from people who were doing really cool stuff, make cool things again.
Yep.
So it's okay to say that you're from Milwaukee. We don't have to worry about this inferiority complex that, you know, plagued us for like 30 years, you know, and or maybe even longer in some cases. But, you know, it's cool to say, you know, you're from Milwaukee now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been trying to do that for 17 years, and because Too Much Metal was always Milwaukee.
Yep.
You know, it's I've never been ashamed of that. And so I've advocated everywhere for it.
Nice.
You know, I mean, because why not, man? Some of the coolest people on the planet live right here.
I agree with that 100%, including you and I.
Oh, dang. That's crazy.
Okay, so what advice would you offer to the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
That's a real businessy type question.
It is.
Well, basically, you got to love what you're doing, because if you just want to grow your network for sales and stuff like that, then you're some schemer dude and you're going to get found out eventually. And your whatever it is that you're trying to grow is going to fail. Mm-hmm. It just does. Because if you don't believe in what you do, or you don't even like what you do, then don't even start. You know? I mean,
I agree with that 100%.
You just got to love what you do. And associate yourself with people who also love what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And then make friends.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't make sense for like a plumber and a lawyer to be drinking buddies, you know, unless, you know what I mean? Or a construction worker. You know, it's not a discipline thing, right? I mean, so someone in their own world who always makes friends with people in their own world is probably going to grow their business a lot quicker, you know, because you're always with them. You know what I mean?
Yes, I guess. Yeah, that does make sense.
So
yes.
That's kind of what you want to do. So it's like at a certain point you can have your friends. Right.
Uh-huh.
But then you got to also like have your business friends too. And so it's like the networking is making yourself available.
There is some crossover, you know, it's not a black and white. This is my personal relationships and these are my business relationships.
Correct. Right. You know, and when you find out that all your friends are people in your own world and you don't have any real friends, then you know, you're probably really rich. Because you're paying them for your friends.
So I need to change my philosophy.
Yeah, me too, man. That's probably why I'm still. That's I know, right? That's what it is.
Okay.
I know. No, but I think like if it comes from a real place, if it comes from something that you actually believe in or care about, then you want to, you know, you get greedy with that. And you want to like show off what you can do with other people who, you know, do what they do, and you kind of trade back and forth, and then you kind of grow from that. So that's how that's how I think it naturally grows. I mean, you can buy clicks and you can buy Facebook ads and all that stuff and put it out in front of people. But if it looks like some junk, like if it looks like a Heinz commercial, like, you know, when you're like flipping through Instagram and you see like Heinz ketchup in there.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to see that.
Yeah.
You know, like your news stream says like, you know, Donald Trump 20 times.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that.
I agree with that.
You know, 100%. I just don't want to see it. It's kind of like, so then, you know, just because like you fit a general demographic and people want to share that, you know, with you quickly, that's junk. You're not going to fail. It just does. People like don't care about it.
Yeah.
When's the last time you bought a bottle of Heinz ketchup?
Last weekend.
Because you had an outing.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. I haven't bought a bottle of Heinz ketchup in 10 years. I wait for you to go get it.
Yeah.
And then I show up at your party.
That's exactly why. Okay. No, that's a really interesting. But I agree with that. It really comes down to being passionate and just loving what it is that you're doing.
Yeah. And it does. I mean, it's not fake, you know. And,
genuine.
It's genuine. Yes. Genuine basically begets more genuineness, and then it just grows and it just grows, and like cell mutation, it just goes everywhere.
Totally. All right, so digital networking or traditional networking, which one do you find more valuable?
How do you mean networking?
Networking, building relationships, connecting with people. I mean,
I think there's like a digital friend set, and then there's like a real life friend set.
Uh-huh.
And so I found that the digital thing works great to like as an introduction. And then when you get to, you know, see people, especially in my world, because, you know, I'm trying to like, you know, get them to like what I'm doing.
Yep.
And so if that's like the introduction and then they, you know, see what I do at a street festival or whatever, then they kind of go, oh, I know you from online. And then
sure.
You start talking to them in real life. And then you realize that was actually a pretty cool first introduction.
Sure.
And so I would say as a digital thing, it's a great intro.
Okay.
But you got to reaffirm it in real life.
Yep.
You know, at least I do, because it's a personal brand, right?
Now, doesn't it go the other way, though? People meet you for the first time at the shows, and then they learn and about you and start.
There's a lot of that, yeah. And they generally say things like, do you have a business card? To which I say, hell no. Why would I have a business card?
Sure.
I'd give you a sticker, and then you can Google that, right?
Yep.
or they can take a photo of the counter that has the web address on it.
Yeah.
And because I found, like, whenever I, like, made flyers and stuff for people to, you know, like business cards and stuff, they just get thrown away.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So if you give them something a little bit more valuable, like a sticker, then they kind of use it, and then they put it somewhere, and then they Google it, or, you know, they'll find it.
Yeah.
So all that stuff is connected, you know? I mean, so when this began a long time ago, when the internet's first started, I kind of figured out that the whole, your whole identity is going to be, if it ain't online, it ain't real type thing.
Yep.
You know, the whole Too Much Metal thing started online first. And I had, like, a, you know, like an apartment warehouse where the hallways and then the walls were just shelves of merchandise that I would fulfill. And so so that's how I would do it.
Okay.
And it started there. So a lot of people got to were introduced that way. And then when I would do these festivals, they're like, hey, we saw you in, you know, we saw the Google ad, or we saw back when Google AdWords were popular, you know, or we saw the ad that you did, you know, in Rolling Stone or something like that. And then it's just reaffirmed it. So I'm a firm believer that it's a, maybe not the other way around. If they do see you for the first time, it's because they're curious, because they've got so many other things going on in their world. And if you can leave behind something that they can get, they'll eventually, you know, in that instance, do some more research, buy something online, right? Because they've already determined that you're cool, right?
Yeah.
And so that works that way. But for the most part, new audiences, I find, are generally discovered, or, you know, I find that if I do a digital campaign, it's so much more exciting to see them in real life afterwards.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure. So you start with digital. That's kind of the foot in the door.
Yeah. Because then you get a really good indication of what you're doing, and you get great feedback, because everyone feels like a king keyboard warrior and say whatever they want in front of the screen. But when you get them in real life, they just have no courage at all. And they go, oh, I see. There's like a Briggs-Myers test for you. I know who you are.
And, oh, yeah, that's interesting.
You know, and then you find out, okay, that's just who they are. And, you know, I mean, not everyone's like you, and that we all know that.
Yeah.
And so for me, I think, you know, I quickly discovered that someone's personality digitally is way different in real life.
Totally.
And so when I figured that out, that's when I started listening more often.
Oh, okay.
You know, because I'm like, I can talk at length about anything forever because I'm just full of crap sometimes. And, you know, I mean, it's easy to talk nonsense. But when you actually discover that someone is not, you know, like, this is who they really are.
Sure.
Then you're like, oh, it's time to just shut up and listen.
Yep. That's good. And I love the emphasis on listening that you're really advocating here. I think there's so much importance around that word. And there are too many people out there that are just kind of nonstop talking about a lot of crap, as you referenced.
Yeah, they do. And you realize that a lot more people have more things in common than they don't. You know, but, it, you know, because of social and stuff like that, it's very easy for people to just mouth off in the middle of the night when they're hammered, or respond to something because they initially feel that way, not having thought through it and who their people are. And then you go, wow, man, that's not really, it's just like a, it's like a version of yourself. It's like a copy of yourself. It's not. And then for you to, like, actually, and for, you know, it's weird because for some people, it's the first time they discover that they even have a voice, you know? And then it's like, oh, that's cool. Very rarely do you see two people that are exactly the same person online and in real life. At least I've discovered that.
No, I would agree with that.
And because there's, like, that protection.
Yep.
You know? So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde sometimes.
Totally. Well, what I've noticed, and we've had some conversations around introverts and extroverts, that the introverts really enjoy the digital.
Oh, yeah.
Because
totally.
That whole, like, layer of fear or anxiety is just automatically removed.
You know, because it's what people stop doing now, and if you, and I've noticed this, that they stop looking at each other. Like, they stop, they don't look at each other in the eye. They'll look over your eye, over your ear, or over your shoulder. They'll make eye contact once or twice, and then they look away, you know. And that's mostly because that's, you know, an indication of a bunch of screen time. You know, because it's moving fast, and it's like every 8 seconds there's something different on the screen, right? So your eyes just generally follow what they're used to.
Yep.
And then, so those are the same people that, you know, talk loud and say nothing online. And then when they actually see them in real life, they'll look at you for a second, and then they're afraid to look at you again. You know, and it's like, well, of course, that's simple. That's technology taking you away from, you know, just actually being human towards each other.
Yeah, it's an interesting kind of study or analysis that you
Absolutely, because, I mean, when I talk to cats, you know, when I over the counter sure. when they're buying stuff or like they like my shirts, you know, I'm always maintaining eye contact and I'm making sure that they're looking at stuff on the wall that I'm showing
sure.
them,
yep.
you know, and that's cool because it's exciting. I can see like light bulbs go off and like, oh, I know what you're doing. And then they focus,
yep.
you know, and when they're focused, it's very easy to look at somebody in the eye,
yep.
you know, and talk to them because then you're like, okay, now we've established that we have something in common. Let's continue this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I can't stand the small talk nonsense. And when I see it all the time, I'll hang out in front of the building and people are like asking me the dumbest questions ever. Like they'll see me rolling a bunch of carts around and they'll automatically assume I'm doing something. And I would never automatically assume just because you're carrying your camera around that you've got like a photo exhibit or you're out doing something, yeah. you know, like I'm not interested in that. You know, I'm just interested in saying, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
and then you can tell me what's up.
Yeah.
You know, just don't assume X, Y, and Z and then not give a crap and walk away.
Yep.
You know, because yep. that's like, just say hi, man. Yeah. Just say what's up.
Yeah.
That's it. You know, I don't need like your analysis all the time, you know, and I feel people, you know, are doing a lot more of that. And maybe that's because the digital thing allows them to do it.
Yep.
And then, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so they feel like they can get away with it. And then when you say nothing, they just kind of look at you funny and like, well, yeah, that's small talk. It doesn't go anywhere. And, but you know, what's wrong with just a little, hey, hi.
Yeah.
It gets
be,
you more.
Be human, right?
Exactly. It's, yeah, you know, just keep on paying attention.
Yeah, we don't want that artificial intelligence.
It's coming though, man. It's coming.
All right. So if you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
Oh, man. I probably would have told myself to partner with someone who was a lot more like-minded.
Talk about that.
Well, because I had a lot of friends that, you know, it still do. Actually, maybe we say that. Who were like-minded doing exactly what I wanted to do. And so, you know, I was in the business world. Sometimes that's not always the best thing to do, you know, which kind of contradicted a little mm-hmm. what I said before, but that's kind of what all this stuff is about. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I probably would have told myself to take it a little bit more seriously.
Okay.
You know, because with this sort of stuff, you don't know if, you know, at least what I do, I don't know if anybody really liked it. So it was like, oh, well, you know, I mean, I didn't get the affirmation until later. And probably because I was always worried that I would fail at doing something. So I just didn't care, you know. I really cared. And so therefore, I didn't care if I tried too hard. And then when I realized that some one person liked it, I was like, well, then that's cool. Then it's okay to make new friends. Mm-hmm. And so I was a little bit probably too guarded with a lot of the stuff. And, you know, mostly because I didn't know how to do it. And I always thought someone was trying to rip you off. And many cases that did happen. And then those experiences turned into like, oh, this is how you do things. And so you don't do them again. Learned, yeah, there were right? absolutely lessons learned, you know, but that's part of it. And I guess, you know, I shouldn't have been such a stickler for it. And I should have lightened up probably a lot more. And that's probably one thing I would have told myself to do is just take it seriously. Yeah. But then don't take it so seriously when, you know, things don't connect.
Yeah.
Because eventually, because you love it, you don't know at the time that you really love it,
yeah.
you know? You don't know yet. I mean, you just think you do.
Yep.
You know, you feel it, you just don't know how to express it.
Yep.
And once you figure out how to express it, then it's like, oh, wow, keep on going.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Exactly. And so, you know, and that's probably the whole point of not listening a lot, you know?
Sure.
When you're young, nobody listens. Everybody thinks they're on top of the world, right?
Yeah.
And so the cats that I find out that are really young and precocious now are the ones I want to hang out with. Or work with, or work for me, or whatever, because you know they're actually somehow their life story was different than mine, and at their very young age, they were listening better than I was.
Okay.
So there you go. Make sense?
Yeah, really good. All right, so we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Who would be the one person you'd love to connect with, and do you think you could do it within the 6th degree?
I can do that with a lot of people, but I just don't want to.
Okay.
Just don't care.
There's no one.
No. I mean, I used to have that fame thing.
Yeah.
I used to be awestruck with certain people. And now I'm just like, they're kind of doing exactly what I'm doing.
Okay.
They're just doing it a lot better than me, or you know what I mean? It's like, then it doesn't, I don't know. I mean, I used to really take that thing seriously. It's like, I need to hang out with this person who's like made it.
Yeah.
And then I realized, well, they made it, man. Like, they're not exactly, I want to keep their idea of who they were, like over there. I don't want to know them on a real level. The imagination is so much more important, you know?
And that is probably kind of fueling some of your energy.
Absolutely, it does. It totally does.
And you don't want it to like burn it out,
right?
Fizzle it out.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, so I don't want to know. I mean, if it happens, that's cool. You know, it's like, oh, you do this is oh wow, man! Like I've loved your music or your movies or whatever it was for so long, but now, I mean, it's like now I get to talk to you about them differently than I would as like a fan. You know, I mean, we still have fans, you know, there's still like certain people that are like, whoa, dude, I love that. I got to ever meet them. And I'm like, sometimes I had many opportunities to do that.
Sure.
And looking back, I've probably said no to most of them.
Okay.
Because I just don't want to know them that way.
But is that, I'm going to go back to your response with that last question where you talked about fear. Is it because of that fear that it's not going to end up being?
It used to be that way. It used to be that way, right? Exactly, because it'd be like a total letdown.
Yeah.
And then I got all zen about it, and I thought, well, you know, learned some lessons over the years, and that if you have these unrealistic expectations because you're a fan geek or a fanboy, that you're always going to be disappointed.
Yep.
And so if you have none to begin with, and you look at them the same way you look at you're like, you know, your best friend, your wife, your husband, your mom, your dad, whoever it is. Then you realize they're a lot like you.
Yeah.
They just are really, really gifted and can do something that you used to be in awe of that you can probably now do yourself, and you have a different conversation other than like, you know, fanboy, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And so I was like, that's not real, you know, and when you start believing in weird things like that, you start believing in nonsense like Santa Claus and the, you know, the Easter Bunny. And
what? There's no Santa?
Well, that's what it's like in a weird way, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with
and
that.
And so it's like, well, let's just kind of calm this nonsense down.
That's interesting. Because
these cats are a lot more, you know, real than we want to give them credit for. And then when you realize that a lot of this is just, you know, you projecting your, you know, things onto other people, then it's just really always comes down to you. And so I'd rather just not go out of my way to meet somebody for the sake of meeting them because, like, I'm a fan. I just probably been let down too many times.
What about, and I'm sorry, I keep digging at this one. I'm just intrigued by your answer here. So, you know, you put a lot of emphasis on listening. What if you got the opportunity, it was just you and this individual, and you could just listen and learn from this person? Wouldn't you... Isn't there someone out there that you would just...
Oh, I do it absolutely all the time. Okay. I do. I read their books.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. You know? I read their books. I watch their movies. And then I listen to their music.
Okay.
And I kind of don't want to know why they did it. I just... You know what I mean?
I mean,
you get that in panel discussions and things like that. So, you know, we all wanted to hear what Steve Jobs had to say. Or, you know, we all wanted to hear what, you know, somebody else wanted to say. Right?
Sure.
But, like, I don't want to meet them one-on-one.
Okay.
I'd rather just have them talk and listen to what they had to say with a whole bunch of other people, you know? I don't know. I just don't like that. I was never into that. Unless it happens organically, then I feel like if it's like a meet and greet type thing, I don't do well in those type things.
Interesting.
You know, I get all stupid and, I mean, I used to. Now it's just like, okay, it's part of the business, it's a professional thing.
Sure.
But there's so, you know, I mean, that's what their books and their autobiographies and their biographies and all that stuff are for.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, I mean, I've got so many cool people in my life that I guess I'm happy with them.
Cool. Good. It's a very non-traditional answer that I've got for that question, but it was good discussion. So thanks.
Yeah, for sure.
Sharing.
I don't know. It's a little different. I mean, everyone. The hero worship thing is there's so many more interesting heroes that aren't on the front page of whatever you're looking at that I'd rather hang out with than someone who's like a Kim Kardashian who's complete nonsense.
I would not label her a hero by any means.
No, but for some people they are.
You're right.
I mean, but that's, you know, or you know, or like a Bill Gates, you know, and but then you realize that Bill Gates actually turned out to be a really super cool human being, you know, and you're like, okay, that's the guy I do want to listen to now. You know, I'd rather use Steve Jobs' products, but I'm much more interested in listening to Bill Gates tell me a story. So it's this weird, I mean, this is, you know, this is, you know, this is this weird circle that goes around, you know.
All right, so reading books, I'm always curious what book my guests are currently
reading. I haven't read one in the beginning of this year at all. I only read in the winter because I've got a lot of time.
Summer is your
busy season. Right, so I don't have time to read. I mean, mostly I just read articles and stuff like that. The last book that I read was a good question. It was a Studs Terkel book. But you know, this is old school baseball school writer or whatever, and just his unique approach on Americana and the way people do things and the way you can phrase stuff. And so it's like listening to that guy's stories is like listening to like an old sage, like some philosopher from way back when, that, you know, it's like, wow, man, that's what that means. You know, I can't do that.
Sure.
I don't have that insight. You know, I don't have that level of insight to contextualize things like the way these guys do. And that's what a really great writer does, can create that imagination. And then you're like, oh, that's what that means. And like light bulbs go off, you know, it's like, I don't have that capability to do that. So for me to read, you know, that guy's little stories was like, oh, this is like cool little treat, you know?
It sounds like a really good read actually.
It is. It's great. And it's easy to read in that he, you know, he's one of those writers that just knows how to flow.
Well, what was the name of the book again?
I don't remember the name of the book. I just remember it's one of his last ones. It was a Studs Terkel book. It was 10 last stories or something like that.
Okay.
Not exactly sure.
I'll try to find it and put that in the show notes.
Yeah, definitely. It's one in his bibliography. You'll see it came out in like maybe 2014 or 15 or something like that.
Okay. So at one point you kind of commented that you are an advocate for Milwaukee.
Yeah.
How do you advocate for Milwaukee?
I'm not going to say that's a really good. I've been doing it for so long when I was studying art in Vienna, long time ago. okay. No one needs to know that I'm a geezer. But I was always Milwaukee proud, man. And, you know, from the baseball hat to, you know, just everything that I had experienced here, I thought, well, a lot of people don't know about how cool of a city this is.
Yeah.
And so when you dig deep is what my whole life has been, is to make new friends. You find out that it's a lot of really cool people here.
Totally.
And so, you know, most of the time I'm talking about their stories when I advocate. It's like, so-and-so did this. They've got the coolest taco shop.
Yeah.
That guy's got the best hat shop.
Yep.
You know, that dude's a blacksmith. No one else is doing it. Those are the kinds of stories that I'll carry and advocate for.
Yep.
I mean, and because that's what makes up this town, you know, and the more people know that those things are going on, we kind of sidestep the illusion of like all that we are is beer and cheese and things like that and brats, you know. I mean, that's very easy to say because like TV shows that, you know, were around that, you know what I mean? It's a generational thing. Yep. And then, you know, you just realize that a lot of that stuff is just made up. Let's not talk about made up things. Let's talk about real people doing real things.
Cool things.
Yeah, absolutely. And then when people say that goes on in Milwaukee, you're like, yeah, dude.
Yeah.
And for 4 months out of the year, this is probably the coolest place in the world, the summer in Milwaukee.
Yeah, there's always something to do.
There's always something to do. It's mostly because 9 months out of the year or 8 months out of the year, we're like cooped up inside.
Pretty much.
And so we can't wait to get out and just enjoy it.
Yep.
Because, you know we don't have it that well in January and February, mostly March too.
Yeah.
So we all kind of cram it out, you know, or cram it in those 4 months.
Uh-huh.
And so, that's.
All right. So one of the things that you talk about is making the rad. So how do you make the rad?
The rad, that's a good one. And because I feel like I've always done that, mostly because I didn't realize I had a voice. And when then I actually discovered that I did have one, it was very different than everyone else's. And people started to notice. And it was like a smart shirt or a smart design or a different look or something I saw, you know, before anyone else did, and then put it together. Mostly because I'm not interested in the obvious stuff.
Sure.
you know? And so if it's got a layer of a little bit of smartness, it's got a different look, if it makes people stop and question it, you know, your average, you know, Skechers shoe buyer or your Kohl's department store buyer is not going to probably like my stuff.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, they're kind of like discount people. Yeah. And, you know, what I mean by that is like, you know, they've got families, and so that the shopping experience for them is not predicated on anything but value. And, right.
Yep.
So if you can afford this stuff, because I mean, I make all this stuff,
yep.
you know, and so it's not everybody, not every day you can see something, make it, produce it, and have people like it. And then I'm pretty lucky I get to do this for a living.
Yeah.
You know, my greatest fear was that I'd end up doing something boring for the rest of my life, you know, and hating it, you know, because like that's not, I always thought that when you work, you discover what you think you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you figured that out, that's what you do for the rest of your life.
Totally.
Because you find out what you're good at.
Yep.
You know?
And you enjoy.
And you enjoy, right. I mean, like if you're a baseball player, right? And like you know you're really good at baseball, yeah. then play baseball.
Yeah.
Right?
Which every little boy wants to do.
Which, right. But, you know, and then you realize that, you know, maybe you're not that good.
Uh-huh.
And then you have to figure out something else.
Yep.
Well, I was kind of like, well, I'm not really good at all these other things, like, you know, working at like a bank or working at like, you know, a factory or, you know, doing something like fixing a car, you know, or being a, you know, an auto mechanic or something like that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just not good at it.
Sure.
You know, I'm not good at fishing. I'm not good at hunting. You know, I'm not good at all these things, but what I am really good at, that's what I'm going to do.
Sure.
And then occasionally, like, I'll be like, oh, that's what that's like. And then enjoy it as like a fan or like a hobby. You know, and that's what other people do too. That's the relaxing thing. But my relaxing thing is basically, because the record button is always on, it's just putting it on pause every once in a while and watching other people do their stuff.
Okay.
So that's kind of making the rad. And then that turns into advocating for them.
Yeah.
You know, because if you can travel someplace and say, really cool things happen here, you should know about them.
Yep.
That's how you advocate the rad.
Yeah. Well, it's fantastic. I love it.
So, yeah, I mean, it's weird. It's almost like a curse. You don't realize how weird it is until other people say things to you like, this all you do is talk about what you do. And I'm like, it's not always what I do.
Yeah.
It's just me observing what other people do.
Sure.
And that's...
And advocating it.
And advocating
it,
right.
Promoting it and saying...
Yeah, you know, because for a long time, you know, you had, you know, big business like factories and breweries and machine shops and all this stuff kind of like, you know, and there's nothing wrong with those things. I mean, but... In the creative world here, Milwaukee is very small, and there's a lot of interesting people doing a lot of creative things that probably because of, you know, how the economy changed and the industry changed here, were forced to do things they hated, you know, and then, you know, now all of a sudden everyone's a crafter, but they're not really good at it,
yep.
you know, and then the ones that are really good at it continue to do it and totally. Stuff like that.
Yep.
So, you know, mostly because the recession kicked them out of their shitty job that they hated in the first place because, you know, they didn't want to work at A.O. Smith or Briggs & Stratton or Harley Davidson or Miller Brewing. Or all these places are fine. There's nothing wrong with them. But if you're a creative type, you don't ask a creative type to do that sort of stuff.
Yep.
It's the worst thing for them. They end up doing, their entire life is just, you know, you can see it in their faces. They don't like what they're doing.
Yep.
And so I'm lucky, man. I'm a lucky dude. And I got to say, man, that probably would have been me. So, I don't know. I just continued doing it because I didn't know anything else.
So, as far as design, obviously, you've got it's your whole model is based on your creativity and design. What is your biggest design do and your biggest design don't?
At the moment, the biggest design don't is to avoid using the shape of Wisconsin and everything that you do. I mean, it's like, yeah, we get that's your hometown or home state. We get that. It's pretty clear, you know. I just don't want to see it anymore, you know. Like, I'm noticing it at funeral homes now. I'm like,
oh, goodness.
Why is there a state of Wisconsin? It's like, we already know where you're buried, okay?
Uh-huh.
Don't need it on your front, you know, we don't need it the gates of the cemetery, right? The do, I would say, if people could do what I'd like to see a lot more of, is kind of like an outside, like a raw approach to design. Because with design, it's so by the book, and it's structure, and it needs to have a solution, and which is fine. So, you know, that's what kind of corporate design is too. But I think there's so much of it over the last year, 20, 25 years now, that it all begins looking the same.
And so they're all going to school, learning the same.
Right, they're all learning the same stuff, right. And so to get out of that, what you should do is not really listen to what the professor is telling you.
Yep.
You know, take notes, you know, and then go out and do what you... I mean, if it looks completely hideous, I guarantee you in 5 years, everyone's going to be copying you. Unless it's like a silhouette of the state of Wisconsin, then no one's really going to do that. But, I mean, if you can create your own language without the influence of, like, a structure, you know, of... the same design language repeated over and over again, do more of that.
Yep.
You know, do, you know, as the discipline thing is like, hang out with the friends that do what you do.
Yeah.
Right. And then riff off of each other, do more of that, and then apply what you're talking about into something that you see that no one else sees.
Sure.
Do more of that.
Yeah.
You know, just don't come up with the lazy solution, you know, because we don't need enough. We don't need that anymore, you know? And, you know, I see it a lot where everyone's like, oh, this is what you do. You know, and you realize that this is the same mistake over and over again, perpetrated by a different agent. And you're kind of going, wow, man, it's like chaos and anarchy and design are probably big no-nos, you know. I'd like to see more of that.
Sure, yeah.
You know, I mean, we did for a while when David Carson said this is the end of print, right? And he kind of took everything and flipped it upside down, right? And then we kind of went away from that, and everything is really nice and neat and version 2.0, whatever it is now. Or I don't even know what they call it. And it kind of all looks the same. So if you can introduce in your design work some more chaos and anarchy, that I would love to see. You know, I mean, there's some people who do it really well. And, you know, those are the fans of mine.
I like that. So... of all
or
the
I'm
shirts.
Fans of theirs, what I'm saying is I'm fans of theirs.
Got it. Yeah. of all the shirts that you've designed, which one's been your favorite?
I don't, you know, I've been asked that question last week, and they're really, they're not favorites anymore. They're like, I don't get sentimental about them.
Okay.
I don't. I mean, it's a dumb thing. I mean, I like the the Cooler by the Lake was a funny one. The 414 thing because of the history and the meaning of it, you know, like I can't believe no one ever did that before thing. And so it's like, that's probably because I was listening, you know, and, you know, shoveling snow. But they're not, there isn't like, I don't know. I don't have favorites that I don't make things to like them. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what they are when I make them. I don't, you know, I just don't know. I don't know if that's going to, I don't know. That's just what I'm thinking.
Okay.
You know, I don't have a favorite, really. Sure. I mean, it's a dumb question and a dumb answer.
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's not a dumb question. It's what I'm saying is like, it's a dumb answer for me to give you to that question because I just don't have a good one for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there isn't really one. I know, right?
Are you happy with all the designs that you've done?
I do. I love them all, but I love them all. That's just the thing.
Okay.
You know, there isn't one where I'm like, I mean, they're in the execution sometimes.
They're all
masterpieces. No, they're not. But they're just feelings. You know, they're like someone, you know, I used to do a lot of funnier stuff.
Yep.
And I don't do the funny stuff anymore. And I'm trying to figure out why I don't do the funny stuff anymore.
Well, one thing that
I used to make jokes in t-shirts.
Well,
like
the
jokes
by the lake.
Right, like jokes you could wear.
It
right.
always makes me laugh.
And I had a bunch of other ones like that too, right? And I don't have those anymore. I kind of went away. I don't know.
But you're listening.
Yeah, I'm listening,
so
but
maybe
I'm not.
The trends.
Yeah, but it's
shifted.
Like, I'm listening, but I'm not picking up on it. It's like, I can't make those funny jokes anymore, you know? I mean, there was another one called, you can't say it really, but there was a few other ones that were a lot like that,
okay,
right? And I don't know, I used to have more humor in the work, and now it's not so much humory, and maybe I need to put myself in a place where I can find those jokes again, be a little bit more carefree. So the older you get, the less carefree you become, and you get to a point where you go, I got to be more carefree. That's kind of where I want to be.
Okay.
So that's why, I mean, I'm feeling it for the first time in a long time now.
Interesting.
You know, and it you know, it's probably because I've been doing it for so long.
Sure.
I'm like, oh, I don't have to feel this rush of getting stuff out. You know, I can listen, and it, you know, if I listen more, I can, because I can create it pretty quickly. Like, I don't take design notes. I just like write something down and then create it, you know? And it's like a little note. There isn't like a process with like 20 sketches or anything. Sometimes there are.
Sure.
There are like 20 different file numbers for a file.
Yep.
You know, once you get that initial idea, when you revision and revision. Mm-hmm. But like the initial idea happens very fast. Yep. And then it gets put together really fast.
Okay.
And so I'm looking to do that in the funny thing. And so maybe I just need to hang out with more funny people.
Okay.
I don't know.
Where are you going to place yourself to do that listening? I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is like, oh, a comedy club.
You would think so, right? I mean, because, you know, you riff off of their energy. Sure. And it's good. And then, you know, and you go, oh, that's what dude was saying. This is what it looks like.
Sure.
You know, and, but even with that, though, I think it was more of a journey where I thought everything needed to be funny.
Sure.
You know, and maybe we need to laugh a little bit more again at stuff and just like the absurdity of stuff. So maybe I have a feeling I'm cracking more jokes recently,
okay,
which is good. I haven't done that in a while. And so maybe it's going to come back. So I'd like to do more funny stuff.
Okay, cool.
You know, but like smart, funny stuff.
Yeah, smart. You know, not like, important. Yes.
Right. Because then what, you know, a lot of that happened where you would see, you know, a guy kicking and then you see a donkey, right? And
yeah.
Right. So that's what that stuff turned into. And I'm like, maybe it's like, I don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, wow, that's funny. And so when I was doing the Cooler by the Lake thing in 2006 is when that came out.
Okay.
No one was doing the kick ass thing.
Sure.
You know, with the kick and the donkey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or they weren't doing like the nuts and the whatever.
Yeah.
That it just didn't happen.
Yep.
You know, and then you take it to a trade show and you realize that all everyone really does there is just riff off of each other.
Yep.
And then they take those ideas and it becomes this new language.
Yep.
And then it goes away. It becomes very temporary. And then it becomes like a trend. And like, you know, like with mustaches and stuff like
yep.
that. And mullets and beards mm-hmm. and all this sort of stuff. And it's like, that used to be funny, but now everyone is doing it.
Yep.
It's not become funny anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's weird because like a comedians probably feel the same way. It's like no one goes to their shows to hear the old jokes.
Yep.
They all want to hear the new ones. But when you go to a rock show or a hip hop show or whatever music you go to, all they want to do is hear the new ones.
Yeah.
Or the old ones.
Old ones, yeah.
They don't want to hear the new ones.
That's a really interesting.
You know, so
one.
It's
yeah.
like, you know, here you have, you know, these two great art forms, right? And one is completely sentimental because it makes them feel a certain thing. And then the other one is like you're kind of, you know, you want to feel something new about yourself.
Yep.
So, you know, like it kind of goes back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
And so in the design world, it's kind of like you take all that stuff and then how do you make something that somebody wants to put on or wear, in my case, that makes them feel really good about something or
yep.
themselves mostly. You know, because if you're wearing a t-shirt, you'll find out more about that person from what they're wearing than what they're saying.
Sure.
You know, just
yeah.
look at the red Donald Trump hat,
yeah.
right?
There's definitely personality.
Right. I mean, so it just says something.
Yep, yep.
Right, exactly. And, you know, so I think that's this weird thing about when you always try to have to work in the visual thing
uh-huh.
is, you know, you listen to stuff and then you somehow make a visual representation of what you've experienced.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I like the way you think it just breaks down everything. It's really, really fascinating.
Well, cool. I think so. I mean, you know, I've noticed as I was talking like a bunch of my own contradictions, but that's all this stuff is.
Sure.
You know, it's like that place of you saying something and saying something else. And then that when they come together,
well, what's,
you know, is when the cool stuff happens.
So you were,
like if you're completely convinced of doing things your own way,
sure.
you got no options.
Yeah.
You know, because like, this is the way it is.
Yep.
This is the way it's always been. This is the right way. And it's like, until someone shows you the other way.
Correct.
And then you're kind of going, well, you're too busy doing that for 40 years or 10 years or whatever, making mustache shirts. All this other cool stuff was happening.
Yep.
So, you know, that's, you know, as a designer, the don't thing was, you know, it's very easy to capitalize on that because it's the same language. You're all saying the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And so when you, you know, purposely, you know, recreate that, you're not adding anything new to the conversation, you're not moving it.
Yeah.
You know, and then so you're not creating a great audience, you're not making new friends, you're not really growing, you're just kind of that same person. And I feel like, you know, if you're really the same person you were when you were 20, then when you're not, you haven't made enough mistakes.
Yep.
Like you haven't learned anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
So it's like, you know, the best teacher on the planet is your own mistake.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And what you can do from that. I mean, some people are just do the same mistake over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because I don't know why, but they haven't learned it. They haven't gotten to that point where they needed to go, I need to stop doing this.
Or they're afraid to try something new.
Yeah, that's a fear is a lot to do with it. Fear and laziness are two of the biggest problems
in
this world.
Yep. Yes. Both of those.
So, yeah, I mean, so... You know, I always like to be in that friction area of, you know, a contradiction. you know, because we don't know all the answers. You know, some things are absolute, right? Mm-hmm. But in this world, it's generally, there's no laws. There aren't any rules of good design. I mean, there are, right? I mean, but nobody cares about that anymore.
It's all about the perspective of the person that's absolutely interested in it.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So that's the whole idea of, you know, this is what I want to do. This is my goal. This is how I'm going to achieve that goal. I don't know exactly what it is yet,
yeah.
But I'm going to make it and go along and see what happens with it. Like if you set out to go, I want this reaction because we created this thing and this is the way you're supposed to feel, you got Heinz ketchup.
Yeah.
You know, totally. That's what you got. And, you know, and people love it because like a concert, it's been the same recipe for the last 40 years.
Yeah.
That's why everybody goes to see the Rolling Stones. Nobody gives a crap about their new songs.
Yep.
They haven't had a good one in 40 years, you know, 30 years or whatever, right? Because, you know, and that's the same thing. And people are really okay with that. And, but that's just not me. That's not what makes me do the stuff that I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, at a certain point, you know, in this world, you almost want to stay with the culture. You want to be with it, guide it, be a participant in it. Because that's exciting. That's people being human with each other.
Yeah. What I find interesting, some of the things that you said brought up some thoughts in my head, like the... the fad, you know, mustaches, you know, that's, you got to stay in front of it, but then it fizzles out because everyone's doing it.
Right.
But then you kind of use the analogy.
So if you've noticed there isn't any good ones right now,
correct.
Are there?
You use the analogy of you go to a concert. However, at the same time, you know, if there's a hot song on the radio and it's played over and over and over again, you're just sick of that song, right?
Yeah.
If everyone's playing it over and over again.
Yep.
However, with the t-shirts, you get a t-shirt. And then there's some nostalgia with it. Like, you want to keep it, you know, because you went to this show 20 years ago, so you keep the shirt forever.
Yep. I know.
Because there's something that resonated with you.
Isn't that the great contradiction?
It's really quite fascinating.
You know, everyone who tells you they know exactly what they're doing, they're full of shit.
I agree.
They don't know. I mean, they got a pretty good idea of what they're doing, but, you don't know what happens when you put it out there, man. You don't know how people are going to react to it.
Yeah.
You just, like... I had one that I thought was like really cool was this wavelength design. And when everybody thinks of the word wave around here, they always think of water.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And I'm like, well, there's all kinds of, there's like a sound wave, there's like a light wave.
Uh-huh.
So I created this M and W that looked like something that people had seen before. Just repeated it over and over again. I was like, oh yeah, that's really cool. And it never really caught on. Like not like Cooler by the Lake or the Too Much Metal or the 414 stuff or the Skyline or any of these other ones that, you know, you see a lot of. And although today at the market, I did see one guy and I walked out to him. I said, cool shirt, dude. So he was wearing the wavelength shirt.
That's
awesome. Because like I never, designer's curses, I never get to see my stuff.
Sure.
When I make it, I never see it in the wild.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm like, oh man, why don't, everyone else says they see it, but I never see it.
Uh-huh.
So I made a point of like saying that was a cool shirt to that dude. Mostly because it was like one of those ones that, you know, I love, but it didn't, because I like all of them. It was the one that I thought should have been a lot more popular, but that wasn't.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe 20 years from now, it'll be pulled out of someone's drawer and they'll go, man, that's
this
so...
awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Right. You know, and then everyone's going to want it. Like there's the Sydney High thing that I drew and that old art, you know, hippie building on Juno and Third where they tore it down for the new Bucks stuff. And people still want that today. And I'm like... No, it's done.
Yeah.
Like you're not gonna get it.
You know? Look on Craigslist or eBay.
Yeah, you should have got it back then.
Yep.
You know?
Exactly.
And not enough of you got it back then that now all of a sudden it's sentimental and you want it.
Yeah.
And I'm kinda going, why don't you just draw it yourself?
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, that's what I'm saying. You know, it's kind of like I just, you know, I don't want to be that on demand guy.
Sure.
You know?
That makes sense.
Because I don't, you know, I mean that is, for me that was one thing that was cool and it was a celebration and it was very cool. But now I think it's just time to move on.
Yeah.
You know, and I get that all the time sometimes. It's like, you know, it's like that one, you know, you didn't care about it then. Why do you care about it now?
Sure.
And then so you, it's like you were saying, it just sinks in. It takes time to grow. So you don't know what happens when you put this stuff out there. You know, you just don't know. I mean, some things work, some things don't.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know how it reacts to people. And, you know, when it does, I'm like, I'm still like confounded. I'm like, wow, dude, you. Like we're friends because of this. And that's a cool thing for me anyway, because it's like, you finally get what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, that's all I wanted to do is like talk to you somehow. And this is an easier way of doing it.
Yeah. So any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
Pay attention to what they do, you know, and you know, support him as best as you can, you know? And what was the question again?
Final words.
I guess it's pay attention to what they do. Yeah. 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 Definitely pay attention to what they do. Make sure you, you know, you keep dudes like me honest, you know, and say like, Fred, man, why are you doing that? That's crap, dude. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, let us know so we can constantly, you know, improve whatever it is that we're trying to do. You know, in my case is communicate. So, you know, if I feel like if, you know, if you feel like you've seen something that I've done that, you know, could have been a little bit better, let me know. I'll try to make it better. You know?
All right. That's good. So if anyone was interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way they can reach you?
TooMuchMetal.com. Everything is there. The social, the phone number, the email. It's all there.
Awesome. And we will include that link in the show notes.
Cool.
Fred, thanks so much for being on the show today.
My pleasure, Lori. Thanks so much.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. Good conversation.
Glad you digged it.
This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Fred for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we will see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.